Hi there, and welcome to The Frame, Conversations with Ian de Fineart. This podcast is dedicated to diving into the stories of influential and trailblazing artists and key actors of the art world. The Frame focuses on the background and careers of the individuals who are disrupting the contemporary art world, with a special focus on art from Africa and its diaspora. Now you'll be joined by your host, Sandra Ndache Ngedzwa. Enjoy the show.
We are honored to have a man that wears many hats as a guest on today's episode. Serge Tiroche grew up with art and has a broad experience as a collector, gallery owner, art dealer, curator, and art fund manager. For over a decade, he advised on investment and other wealth management issues at Citigroup's private bank. After leaving banking, his first project was to found START, Israel's first incubator project. He then went on to invest in the Artist Pension Trust and serve as its global chairman until 2010. In 2011, he co-founded ArtVantage, an art fund focused on collecting contemporary art from developing markets via the Tiroche de Lyon collection. His most recent initiative was to found Africa First in 2017, focusing his private collecting and promotional work on contemporary art from Africa and the diaspora. He also invests and advises startups seeking a more market ecosystem. Welcome, Serge. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Did you say it was your first guest on this podcast?
No. So far, I think you are my ninth guest.
You're my ninth guest. Okay, great.
Yes. Great. So I have quite a few people on here.
The more the merrier.
Yes. I think there's a lot of conversation to be had. So thank you for joining us.
Okay,
so to just jump into it, what is your earliest memory of art?
Well, I grew up with art, really. And I think my earliest memory, I don't know if it's a real memory or it's a photographic memory based on a sort of family album photo. But I remember holding a painting by the Jewish artist Manik Katz in my dad's gallery in Palm Beach. In I think it was around 1969, 1970, something like that. So that's as far back as I go with art, which is more than 50 years.
That's incredible. Art really has been a big part of your life. Okay. So you spent many years working in private banking before transforming your passion for art into a full-time career. What drove you to pursue this change after a decade in financial services?
It's a few things that sort of coincided. Midlife crisis, I was 40. I just lost my dad. My sort of marriage was on the rocks, which eventually ended in a divorce. I had spent 10 years in the bank, which wasn't at all, you know, I graduated from business school and my idea was to go into banking only for a number of years, you know, learn the ins and outs of the financial industry. I didn't go and be an entrepreneur. I was always a sort of very independent and entrepreneurial person. I ended up spending 10 years in the bank because I was given a lot of leeway and I built quite a large and successful business for Citigroup. Based in Switzerland first, then I asked to move to London. Then I moved to Israel, opened the private banking office here, and then did the same in Turkey. And so overall, I had a great run for 10 years, had a lot of freedom and independence to build a business, and I was well rewarded for that. And I built an amazing network and you know, experience, I guess, in investments. But 2007, if you remember, there was a huge crisis that took over the financial industry in 2008. And I think I was already sort of feeling that the market was peaking back then. And taking everything together and my longtime passion for art collecting. And also, you know, I was talking about art as an investment since the early 90s. It was completely taboo when I started speaking about art and investment in the same sense back then. And today, I think most people would recognize that the industry is driven in to a large extent by investment. But that was then. And in 2007, when I was trying to figure out what I want to do next, I said to myself that I really need to bring this asset class to a wider audience to enable, you know, financial investors to participate in the art world and through that convert them into actual collectors as well. And that was one of the reasons for, you know, founding all kinds of platforms that took know-how that I learned in the financial industry and implementing it in the art market.
Nice. It's very that's very extensive, and that's a lot of experience. So, I mean, from your childhood and to your experience now, what would you say is the role of the collector in the world of today's contemporary art?
Oh, I think the collector's role has evolved a lot and has taken greater significance. I think, you know, wealthy collectors today are really the ones who are more tastemakers in many respects than major museums, especially, you know, with Instagram days. And, you know, the museums are much less active, let's say, on Instagram in promoting than private collectors are. I think also in terms of available capital, you know, there are wealthy, very, very wealthy individuals who have entered the art world in the last decade or two and are playing a much more significant role than ever before, either through donations to existing institutions or by founding their own institutions and supporting the art market and the galleries. Galleries, of course, are becoming mega players and mega influencers in the art industry. So I think the role of collectors is, you know, very, very significantly. I mean, collectors, let's, you know, there were always collectors that were very influential. But, you know, the number of collectors and the amount of influence they have has grown significantly.
Perfect. So from your experience, I read that you started collecting when you were studying, and of course you grew up around art, but why do people begin to collect art, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's for different reasons. I mean, some people have a lot of disposable income and maybe a lot of time on their hands, and they're looking for, you know, some new passion. Some people do it because it's a status symbol. Some people do it because they're simply, you know, completely attracted by art and what it has to offer. And, you know, people like me who grew up with it and need it because, you know, through art we see the world in, you know, I guess in a more, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but perhaps a broader perspective on the world and, you know, experiences. And we hear a lot about individual stories. And I think we become more sensitive as humans if we're in touch with art. And I think that's the benefit of being involved in it. And yeah. It's become more trendy as well. I think, you know, the young generation, everybody is either an artist or is a collector or NFTs, or, you know, people find way into this market, which is fantastic.
I agree with you. So how has your knowledge of art been developed and strengthened? Also, do you use advisors or do you choose your works, the works you purchase purely on your own?
I'll start with the last part of the sentence. I never used advisors to choose art. I choose it on my own. But that's not to say that I don't seek advice and speak to other fellow collectors, gallerists, curators. I do my own reading. I do my own research. I go to artist studios. Of course, I'm influenced by the environment. You know, I look at what other serious collectors are buying. Even I am influenced by others, and I'm sure, you know, it's the same. I mean, to answer your question, I do get a lot of advice, but it's not advice that I generally pay for, if I can sort of put it that way.
That's actually a good idea for aspiring collectors that may not yet have a budget to invest in an advisor. Emerging art is a tricky thing. How are you able to identify potential?
I've been asked this a number of times. I think, you know, I have some kind of an algorithm that's developed in my head. I've never actually tried to write it down, but the algorithm basically sort of starts with a physical or you know, a visual impression of the works that I see that are presented. If I'm intrigued by them visually, I want to see, the innovation behind it. Is it innovation in technique? Is it an innovation in, I guess, in content? And a skill, obviously skill, and skill can come, it can be a great painter, a great photographer, great sculptor. And the ability to identify skill is something that, evolves over time, I guess. If you're in art nonstop and you've studied the history of art, and you can just see, and it's very hard to explain. And that's why maybe you can't put it in an algorithm, but you can just see when something is good, versus when something isn't so good technically, or is, imitating something else. You need to be constantly aware of what's happening. Who are the innovative artists and who are, the Me Toos. And there are lots of those.
That's really interesting. So how do you actually balance? Because, of course, for you, there's the investor side, which is really logical. And then there's the side of the passion where, maybe you see something and you're like, oh my God, I'm in love with this. Like, how do you balance this?
It's actually a great question, because it's very difficult to create a distinction. So it depends, what the purpose is when I'm looking at the art. Sometimes I'm just enjoying art and I can say, this is amazing, whatever, I love it. But I know, for example, that, my wife would never have us hang that kind of thing at home because it's too terrifying for her. So, it's out of the question to buy it. I can just enjoy it. And also, if I'm buying for investment purposes, then, there are other parameters that come into play. And, the aesthetics of a work is becoming more and more significant, I say, if you're buying for investment, because, as we know, social media, websites, basically everything is moving online. And graphic works work better for online commerce of art. So if a work is less graphic, then, the potential for it to appreciate in value is lower than works that are more graphic in nature at this point in time. And that's something that I also consider. But, going back to my algorithm, there's lots of things that come into play there. Like, who are the collectors buying the artist? Which curators have written about the artist? Which museums have shown the work? Are there any, important upcoming projects? Lots of things, really. Is the work, is the size of the work and the, median of the work right? Are there conservation issues? There's all kinds of bits and pieces of information that come into play when you're making a decision to buy a work of art. For me.
You heard it here first. Pro tip from Serge. Okay. So moving on to talk about Africa First. You are the founder of Africa First, a platform to support and promote art from Africa. Can you tell us more about Africa First and how it came about?
Yeah, sure. I'd have to go back to, more than a decade ago when I started an art fund called Art Vantage that owned the collection called the Tiros de Leon Collection. The strategy for that fund was to invest in developing markets. This was a time soon after I left banking and, a time where I had seen that over the past two decades, the amount of wealth created in developing markets was astronomical. And I could tell that, the growth in the industry was going to come from those new markets in the art industry. And I made the assumption that if I were relatively early in acquiring, important contemporary art from those places, the appreciation potential of those works was going to be enormous. And so I set up a fund focused on investments in contemporary art in developing markets. And that fund was sort of broken down into six regions. And one of the regions was Africa. And that's how I first got involved in Africa. And we had taken, you know, if you look at the whole globe, we had from the outset put a very heavy allocation on Africa in relative terms. That was about 10%. And obviously at the time, you know, the whole African art market was, you know, a lot less than 1% of the global art market in terms of turnover. But we had allocated 10% to Africa because we already then realized that it was, you know, very important, very significant part of the world that had been overlooked for very long. And over the 5 years after we started, we actually, you know, the momentum there started really quickly. And we actually increased our allocation to 16% at some point. And like 5 years after, I had already found great opportunities to sell a lot of the works that we had bought in Africa. And when I, you know, ended the acquisition period for the fund in 2017, I decided that, you know, I thought this part of the world has so much to offer and was still so nascent, so early stage that, you know, I really wanted to be part of it. I always loved African art, always. My father, you know, collected some pieces and always loved it. And 2017, I figured, you know, this is what I want to focus on going forward. And I decided to basically divert most of my collecting to Africa, but wanted to do it in a smart way that was more than simply buying works. It was actually, you know, helping, I guess, the Western art ecosystem in the discovery of African talents. And that's why we, you know, founded the website, the newsletters, and Instagram, and did collaborations and prizes and a residency and all kinds of activities to introduce new voices from Africa on an international scale. And yeah, I have to say it's been a great ride. And we're constantly looking for ways to continue the work that we do in Africa first.
It's amazing. What do you think of the representation of African contemporary art on the international scene? Is there something standing in the way of art from Africa enjoying more prominence on the Western stage?
Well, I have to say that at the moment I feel everything is working for African contemporary art. I think the attention that artists are getting from Africa at the moment is, you know, obviously unheard of ever before. I think, you know, there isn't a major gallery in the world today that hasn't added, you know, one or two African artists to their roster. It's like the must-do thing. And, you know, we see the prominence of African art everywhere, you know, in auctions, in museum exhibitions, in, you know, the curators being promoted within institutions that come from, you know, Africa or African diaspora. Yeah, it's just an amazing time now. My concern is actually, you know, the trajectory couldn't be any better. My concern is maybe it's happening a bit too fast and maybe the markets are, you know, at an overbought level. You know, you see prices of artists, you know, doubling and tripling in no time when we're talking about African contemporary artists now in auctions, if you're one of the market darlings. And I'm not sure how sustainable that is. I'm starting to be worried. But I think that success, both of African and African diaspora artists, is fortunately, I say, a lot of that is being circled back onto the continent. And you have, you know, artists who are creating institutions, foundations, you know, schools, residency programs, and new institutions being set up. And so I think there's also important work being done during this time to, you know, increase or improve the infrastructure, which is a positive thing for the long term. So there's these two sort of, you know, things happening in parallel. But I think from a market point of view, it's a time to be selective and careful and not buy, you know, in my opinion, artists that are really, really young and already selling for very high prices at auctions. I think, you know, for some of them, it's not sustainable.
It will be very interesting to see how this trend continues in the next few years.
You've mentioned social media. So how do you, in terms of for up and coming African artists, for instance, so how do you as a collector steer away from, because there's this, you know, with social media, there's always this trending, but it doesn't always necessarily mean that it is excellent. So how do you, like, how does one avoid the thin line between just trending and clickbait and work that probably eventually pays off as an investment?
Well, you know, the velocity of the market has also increased dramatically. So, you know, if I want to be realistic, I say the best thing you can do is, you know, really a lot of research online and see if what you're looking at is really original. I think that's where a lot of it starts. And if you have the time and you really want to be diligent before you're buying something, mm-hmm. maybe ask to, you know, from whoever is selling the work, the artist or the gallery, send you a video where, you know, they approach the work a little bit closer, they move back. And so you get a better sense of, you know, the material. Sometimes, you know, people buy off images that are low quality and they don't really, and the work comes and it's, you know, usually the surprise is like a positive surprise because, you know, but sometimes when the work arrives, I've heard cases of, you know, I won't say names, but some artists that were, you know, very hot, if I can say that. And when the works arrived, people were very disappointed by, you know, the quality of the craftsmanship at the end of the day. The image was very strong, but when you looked at the details, it wasn't quite as good. So, yeah, I think if you have, you know, I'd say ideally you go to the studio or the gallery and see the work, but there's no time for that nowadays. You have to, you know, decide quickly. So the best you can do is ask for, you know, detailed shots and videos, and if you have the patience.
Of course, that makes sense. But I think, of course, the digital trend is amazing, but also it takes away from art, because I think sometimes just seeing a piece in person is more breathtaking, if one wants to put it that way.
Sure.
Then, you know, via a screen. Okay. So you work a lot. This is just about you personally. So you work a lot with art. How do you manage to still keep a clear eye? Because, I mean, you go to art fairs and the social media and you see it all over. How do you then take a step back so that you can, like, really see what is really good without being overwhelmed?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think I am overwhelmed, and I think I sometimes, you know, find out sometime later that I made a mistake and I, you know, got carried away. It happens to me as well. I'm human. But how do I keep a perspective? I guess, you know, I keep my eye on, you know, different parts of the art market. And, you know, I've been in my past, I used to buy and sell, you know, impressionist art, early 20th century art, post-war art. So I, you know, the experience is quite broad, and, you know, and contemporary art from all over the world, and then, you know, developing markets. And now I'm focused on Africa, and I've also, you know, did a lot with young artists in Israel. So the experience is really very, very broad. And I think through that experience, you get some perspective and some bearings. Not to say that I don't make mistakes and I don't get carried away as well. Even today, I do, you know, I do buy a lot of art, sometimes too much. You know, I look back and I say, oh my God, why did I buy so much in the last month? But, it's an addiction. It's an addiction.
Well, a good one, I would say. Which is more exciting to you, being a collector or being a patron of the arts? Because I would consider you a patron of the arts because you are giving opportunities from the African context. You're giving opportunities to sometimes artists that may go unrecognized. So which one do you prefer, or
which is very kind of you to say that, because, you know, I think it's for me, it's been an evolution. You know, I started off thinking, you know, mostly about what I love and what I want to collect and what makes sense as an investment. And, you know, those were my primary sort of decision factors. I went on to saying, okay, what can I do for the art ecosystem in general? You know, and so I invested in technology startups. I founded one. I created an art fund trying to, like I say, you know, bring in new capital into the art market. But, you know, the more I guess I got into contact with the actual artists at the end of the day who were making the work, particularly since I started Africa First and started traveling to Africa, you know, I get a lot more pleasure out of helping an artist succeed than I do from, you know, making a profit myself. So I would say that today, you know, yes, making a profit is still, I'm a person who comes from a financial background. I look at art as an investment. I've always preached it to be an investment. But when you buy art, you know, sometimes a lot of it, you know, is worth nothing after a while. And so you get, I guess, myopia if you're only looking at the successes and you don't see the whole picture. A lot of the art I buy has ended up being worthless at the end of the day. But overall, I'm you know, it's great to be doing this. But like I said, the evolution is that, you know, what's driving me more and more these days is really the patron part of, you know, my activity, the patronage, the discovery, the promotion, opening the doors to other collectors. And I'm actually, I know it's one of your next questions, so I'll leave it for that about, you know, what I'm doing next in this direction. So.
Perfect. Okay, so what excites you about the current African contemporary art scene? I know, what are you looking at and what is exciting to you? You don't have to give any tips, but what you're excited by?
Well, you know, there's so much. I mean, so many artists that I'm excited by. And I think, you know, in general, the development of the African contemporary market that we spoke of before is really exciting. You know, I think it's great to see that bigger galleries are signing up artists. I mean, I see so many artists that we collect that, you know, get upgraded in terms of the gallery presentation. So that is really fantastic. And I think the fact that, you know, there's, you know, even publishers, there's more books coming out on African art. There's more, you know, more information there that people can learn from and get acquainted with the art. So yeah, no, the whole thing is very exciting. But also what I'm worried about is that, you know, the world is, if you're thinking from an economic standpoint, the world is pretty much in uncharted economic bubble territory. And, you know, and I think, you know, the financial depression almost, I think, is coming. I think, you know, it's not going to be a correction. I think there's a major, you know, decline coming in financial markets, and that could have spillover effect on the overall art industry as well. So that's something that I'm worried about. I'll also say that I've been saying this for a number of years now, and the market just seems to continue going. But if you know, basic economics tell you that it's impossible, that there's so much inflation and none of it seems to apply to financial markets. So anyway, it's a riddle and it will get solved.
Okay, you kind of like briefly touched into that. In what direction would you say the art market is heading right now? Do you have anything more to add to that, or?
Well, I'll say for me, you know, one of the things I'm working on at the moment is, you know, I've never wanted to be a gallerist. It was very clear to me that I always want to be a collector, primarily. A patron maybe is important, an advisor, to some extent, a curator. But I never wanted to run a gallery because I don't like selling. Mm-hmm. But I've come to this understanding that, you know, I live in a place where, you know, there's a lot of buying power. There's a lot of wealth that has been created here. The word about, you know, African contemporary art being, you know, very interesting from an investment standpoint and very exciting at the moment has arrived here. And, you know, and I should use my, you know, relationships on the one hand with amazing emerging artists in Africa, and on the other hand with, you know, the best galleries we have in Israel, in order to create another bridge and, you know, create collaborations between African artists and galleries in Israel. So I'm working on a program where we're going to invite, you know, mostly fresh talents from Africa to come and do exhibitions in Israel with various galleries. And not only is the idea that, you know, we through these galleries and their work with collectors locally, we can sell to local collectors. Through my Instagram, I've also made contact with some very serious people around the world who are very interested in collecting contemporary African art, who have collections already and want to grow them. And many of them have, you know, already confirmed their interest in being involved in this and supporting some of the artists that I will bring forward, you know, because they sort of, I guess, like my taste because they've been following Instagram for a while. So that's an exciting new project, and you know we'll send out more information in our next newsletter when we have a few first names that we can announce.
Perfect. Looking forward to that. Okay, so now we're getting towards the end. So, what do you hope your art collector or patronage legacy will be?
Oh, wow. I don't know that I had a small part in, you know, making the life of African artists more fulfilling, and not just them. With many of them, it has a spillover effect to, you know, entire communities. So, you know, maybe helping, you know, better dialogue and better understanding and more economic support for those in need.
Promised final two questions. Sure. Complete the following sentence. I am a patron of the arts because what do you get from art?
Everything. I live through it. I get everything, really. That and family are basically, you know, my drivers in life.
That's perfect. Okay, so the final question. If you could have a billboard, like think New York Times Square, with anything on it, what would it be and what would it say and why?
It would probably be the last artwork I bought, and, you know, I'll spill my gut out and say, why did I buy it? Why do I love it? That's it.
That is perfect. That brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much, Serge, for joining us. It was lovely. It was really lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of The Frame, Conversations with Ianda Fine Art. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate and follow The Frame on your podcast streaming platform. Want to find out more about our guest or the show? Check out the show notes or go to www.iandafineart.com. And be sure to share the show with other fellow art lovers around the world.